Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, January 17th, 2020. Our guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me every Friday with news and insights on publishing and reading. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So as you have predicted from the very beginning, Nostradamus, Audible and seven major publishers have settled a lawsuit over the Amazon subsidiary's proposed captions program for ebooks, though we won't know much more about it until next week.
Yeah, this kind of feels like what we mean when we say, you know, ending with a whimper and not a bang. We just learned from a very short letter filed with the court this week that the parties in this pretty high profile copyright infringement suit over Audible's captions program have in fact resolved their dispute. I would have expected a press release from somebody or a statement, but that was not to be, at least not as of yet. Maybe we'll get something today. Now, listeners will recall that this suit was first filed in August of 2019 by seven publishers, all of the big five, who claimed that that Audible's proposed captions program, which, you know, scrolls a few words of an AI-generated transcription alongside an audiobook narration in the Audible app, that amounted to blatant copyright infringement. Audible, of course, countered that the captions program was not a reading experience. It was an enhanced audio experience and that this was protected by fair use. And they sought to have this copyright suit tossed, interestingly. They argued because it was incorrectly pled. Audible says that because they have license agreements with the publishers to distribute audiobooks and because the captions program is a feature of those audiobooks to be used with those audiobooks, that the publishers can sue for infringement without first claiming breach of contract. But hey, that's the background, and it now appears to be over. The parties have asked for another week to get signed documents over to the court for approval, so we really don't have any details yet. But we can say that this news means that the court won't have to rule on the publisher's bid for a preliminary injunction, nor will it have to rule on Audible's motion to dismiss the copyright suit. And I should add also that because this is a suit between private parties, it's unclear what kind of details we will be getting eventually. But I do imagine, I mean, we'll almost have to see something at some point unless Audible quietly decides not to move forward with this program, like they did back in 2009 with its text-to-speech function, which kind of just went away at the threat of a lawsuit. There wasn't even a lawsuit filed over that.
And you've maintained, Andrew, all along in this litigation that a judge would never get the chance to make a ruling. So do you have a hot take on this announcement? What are your early reactions to this settlement?
Yeah, so, you know, the first hot take, I think, is to point out that despite this very high-profile lawsuit, that captions isn't available. We really have no actual harm here to judge infringement by, just potential harm. Now, you can still win a case on potential harm, but the fact is, you know, captions is not launched to the general public. And I say this because reports this week, you know, notably from the AP, which was picked up in many places, listed titles like The Hate U Give, and there was another title in there, as being part of the captions program. But that's just wrong, because Audible agreed early on, as we all know, that they wouldn't launch the program with any of the plaintiff publishers' titles until the court ruled on a preliminary injunction. And later on, Audible said that they were going to limit the program's launch anyway, just to a select group of students with public domain works only. And it's not even clear that pilot ever launched. But onto the substance of this question, I mean, I do wonder what this settlement is going to look like. I mean, we're talking about seven individual publishers who all have their own independent contracts with Audible. You know, this isn't a class action, so I don't expect that this settlement could be, you know, very wide-ranging or can shed much light on the fair use case that was at issue here. And to that point, our listeners may remember that Audible in October told the court that they'd made a proposal they believe mooted the suit. Now, that's important. They mooted the suit. They weren't settling it. They were mooting it. Now, reps for the Association of American Publishers told us at the time they did not believe that Audible's proposal mooted the suit. And they remained for a while pretty insistent that the court rule swiftly on their bid for a preliminary injunction. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that, yeah, I bet Audible very likely did moot this suit just by saying that they weren't going to launch it with works from the plaintiff publishers or something along those lines. Or maybe they agreed to launch the program only as an opt-in, whatever. My point is that without actual infringement, there's really not much point in moving the suit forward. There's basis for a settlement. And as you know, I've said all along, it's not clear that Audible ever really planned to launch the program with any intent to include copyrighted works. Now, could be wrong about that, and maybe we'll learn more about that now. But it sure seems to me that this suit was filed very quickly by publishers whose fears were stoked by the demo of this product, a report in USA Today, and by Audible officials saying that they disagreed with the publisher's read on the program's legality, while also hinting that they were going to launch the program very soon with every audiobook that, and I'll quote them here, they deemed to be within the parameters they set for the Audible program. Now, was copyright status going to be one of the things, one of the parameters evaluated when deciding what captions would be allowed to work with? I would assume yes, but Audible clearly refused to say that explicitly to the publishers. You have to wonder why. And I can understand why publishers, unable to get the assurances that they wanted from Audible, went ahead and filed this suit. But the question I've always had from the beginning of this suit was, well, you know, why not make the threat of a suit and then wait and see if the program actually launches before filing it? I mean, did these major publishers not have the confidence to say, I call BS, this is clearly illegal, and if you launch it with our books, we're going to sue you and we're going to win? You know, you have to ask yourself why this odd little program for audiobooks was so threatening to the major publishers. Was it really going to hurt the publishers so much that they couldn't wait to see if Audible actually launched the program under the threat of litigation? Did we need to spend all this money and time in court? You know, as you know, I always found this case puzzling and telling, at least in the sense of what it reveals about how adversarial Amazon, which owns Audible, is with these major publishers, that they can't even sit down and come to an agreement about a program that's supposedly going to sell more audiobooks and benefit everyone. So, you know, long story short, I'm really curious to see what the final settlement is here, because the big unanswered question this news leaves me with is, what was this all really about? Because it really doesn't feel like this was, you know, because this really does feel, I should say, like this was part of a much bigger battle than just some error-riddled AI program, does it not?
Well, unanswered questions do clearly remain. Settlement be darned. What do you think happens next?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if the captions program launches and how quickly and under what terms and who's in. But, you know, my parting shot here is let's not lose the forest for the trees. You know, this is an Amazon company. These are the major publishers. And as I've said before, you know, this was never so much a copyright issue to me as it was a negotiation, which is to say that in some way, this episode, settled or not, litigated or not, is going to continue to play out, at least, or at least loom over any negotiations going forward between the two parties. And here's another takeaway. The AI age for publishers, it's officially underway. You know, the fact is that there are already tools out there that can do for free what captions does. Audible lawyers, in fact, pointed this out to the court in their September hearing. And that is, you know, there are programs that can create AI-generated transcripts of books or TV shows or whatever. AI has loomed in the abstract over the publishing industry for some time. And you and I know this because it's a topic at book fairs in London and Frankfurt every year. Now, a lot of AI is still not very good. But in the next decade, man, I got to believe AI is going to get really good and that there are going to be a lot of commercial applications. So a takeaway not to be, you know, shunted aside here from this whole episode is that the dawning of the age of artificial intelligence is going to be a challenge for publishers.
And a week from today, Andrew, ALA Midwinter kicks off. We'll be hearing from you in our next program from the show floor in Philadelphia. Ahead of the big day, there's news that ALA, the American Library Association, have named a new executive director, and they made a little history while doing it.
Yes. After a lengthy national search, the ALA this week announced the appointment of Tracy D. Hall as its executive director. That's effective February 24th, 2020. Hall is going to take over for Mary Gekas, who's finally able to retire. And yes, a little history. Hall is the first female African-American executive director in ALA's century and a half history.
And this hiring decision took a good bit of time.
Indeed, it did. You know, Hall's appointment comes after a lengthy and at one time kind of contentious national search following the retirement in 2017 of then executive director Keith Michael Fields. Our listeners may recall that following Fields' retirement, Mary Gekas stepped in as executive director on an interim basis. But after an initial effort, a national search committee was unable to find a suitable candidate to permanently succeed Fields. So Gekas agreed to delay her own retirement till pretty much now, and the organization gave it another try. But they decided to expand the candidate pool by removing the requirement that the ALA executive director hold a library degree. And that change, well, it just sparked a really fractious debate within the association's membership. And in the end, however, ALA found a librarian to take its top post. Tracy Hall holds an MLIS, the library degree, from the Information School at the University of Washington. She also holds an MA in International and Area Studies with an emphasis on Sub-Saharan Africa from a little college you may know, Yale University. She has dual bachelor degrees in law and society and black studies from the University of California, Santa Barbara. She has a lot of degrees. She's also served as the assistant dean of Dominican's Graduate School of Library and Information Science. So not only is she a librarian with a library degree, she teaches library science. And she's also a veteran of the library world. She's held positions at Seattle Public Library, New Haven Free Library, Queens Public Library, Hartford. And in 1998, this is interesting, she was among the first cohort of the ALA's Spectrum Scholars, which is a grant program aiming to diversify librarianship. And she has experience at ALA because she went on to serve as the director of the ALA's Office of Diversity in the early 2000s. And you know, she's also a well-known leader, civic leader in Chicago. She most recently directed the culture portfolio at the Chicago-based Joyce Foundation. So we're going to have plenty to talk about from ALA Midwinter next week, ebooks, the new executive director, lots of stuff going on. But for now, I'll just leave it by reporting that ALA officials are really thrilled with their choice. In a statement, ALA President Wanda Brown described Hall as optimistic, energizing, and innovative. And those are all qualities that the association is really going to need as they retool for the digital age.
And Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me today on Beyond the Book. And we will talk to you next Friday.
My pleasure, as always.
Up next on Beyond the Book, the content that librarians manage today is no longer measured in bookshelves, but in bytes. Over the last two decades, librarians have increasingly come to view their roles and responsibilities in terms of technology. In the delivery of information, innovation is preeminent. Jason Griffey is Director of Strategic Initiatives at NISO, the U.S.-based National Information Standards Organization. Griffey has written extensively on technology and libraries and was recently a fellow and affiliate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. He tells me what the role of a library technologist requires in 2020.
It's increasingly a way that a lot of people tend to identify themselves in libraries. A technologist, you know, is someone who is a sort of jack of all trades when it comes to things digital. I started using the term as my experience in libraries sort of expanded outward from the, you know, the small managing a web presence or managing a particular set of systems to the broader understanding of how technology interacts with all of the multifaceted parts of a modern library.
Bytes, not bookshelves. Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.